Welcome to Searchlight, a survey through Scripture with Pastor John Corson. It is our desire to bring you a systematic study of the entire Bible, chapter by chapter, book by book. Today on Searchlight, we are going to learn an important lesson on engaging the enemy in battle. This lesson is found in a story of a man of courage who was willing to take a risk because of his faith in the Lord. This story that we are talking about is from 1 Samuel chapter 14. It is the story of how Jonathan chose to move against the enemy in the power of the Lord and by the direction of the Lord. Let's now join Pastor John as he begins this interesting story.
1 Samuel chapter 14. Now it came to pass upon a day, or as your margin would say, there was a day, or as Grimm might phrase it, once upon a time. It came to pass upon a day, or there was a day, or once upon a time, as we get into this story, but it's a true one. Jonathan, Prince Jonathan, the son of Saul, said to the young man that bore his armor, "Come, let's go up over to the Philistines' garrison. That is on the other side." But he told not his father. We saw in chapter 13 that there was a garrison of Philistines out by Michmash. The Philistines were arrayed there, encamped there, ready to war against the people of Israel. And Jonathan was there with the army of the Israelites. And he said to his buddy, to his armor bearer, the guy that carried his shield for him and was a companion in battle, he said, "Hey, let's just go over to the garrison of the Philistines. What do you say?" But he didn't tell his father why. Well, verse 2, we can see why he didn't let his father in on his idea. Because Saul, verse 2, tarried in the uttermost part of Gibeon, that was his home, under a pomegranate tree. The pomegranate tree was then, still is, a symbol of victory. Saul was at home. Many of the soldiers were garrisoned with Jonathan. Saul, though, with about 600 of his personal bodyguards, if you would, was at home under a pomegranate tree, a symbol of victory. Interesting, because remember in our story last week, Jonathan in that battle against the Philistines smote the enemy, but who took the credit? Saul. Jonathan smote the Philistines in chapter 13, but Saul blew the trumpet. That is, he let people know that he was the one that was leading the way to victory that day, even though that wasn't true. Now we see that same character flaw in this chapter too. He's under the victory tree at home, you see. Kind of like the report that came out in USA Today, that 92% of all SUV vehicles, 92% of all SUVs have never been off the pavement. They look like they're in safaris, you know, and going through gullies and climbing up mountains, but 92% of all SUVs have never been off the pavement. That's amazing. It's an image. It's something that we want to present. We like to think that we're really these rugged guys, see. but in reality, 92% of SUVs have never been off-road. And Saul was under the pomegranate tree with 600 of his soldiers round about the pomegranate tree, victory. But in reality, he was far from the battle lines. He was home. He was under his tree, pretending that he had victory. That's why Jonathan wouldn't tell Saul, his dad. He wasn't trying to be sneaky or dishonest. He just knew that his dad was not at a place of leading the way in a battle in that day. So Saul was there, and the people that were with Saul, verse 2 goes on to say, were about 600 in number. That would be his bodyguards primarily. And Ahijah, the son of Ahitub, Ichabod's brother, the son of Phinehas, the son of Eli, the Lord's priest in Shiloh, wearing the ephod. That is what would determine the will of God, as you well know. The people knew not that Jonathan was gone. Now, verse 4, between the passages by which Jonathan sought to go over into the Philistines' garrison, there was a sharp rock on the one side and a sharp rock on the other side. The name of the one was Bozez. The name of the other rock was Senna. So Bozez and Senna, the names of these two rocks. You say, that's crazy. Why would they name rocks? Well, why do we name cars? I mean, a lot of people have names for their cars. I used to have a car, a 61 Ford Falcon. I called it the Turquoise Turtle. It was turquoise in color. Called the Turtle because it went from 0 to 60 in about 2.5 hours. But people named they named rocks in those days. But I suggest to you that God records this for a reason. You see, here's the deal. The name of the one rock, Bozez, means literally glistening. The name of the other, Senna, means literally thorny. So here are two rocks that must be navigated through for Jonathan to engage the enemy and gain a victory. Glistening and thorny, that's the way it always is for me. It's the way it's always going to be for you. Glistening, there's all kinds of potentiality, possibilities, rewards and riches if we'll engage the battle, but it's also thorny. There are some problems and some obstacles. There's some challenges, some difficulties. And these two rocks right there, the passageway that would lead to the Philistines' garrison where Jonathan would engage the battle, you see. He had to go through those two rocks, which speak volumes to you and me. Glistening, yeah, there's possibilities, but there's also problems, thorny. That's the way it always is going to be, as we shall see. Well, Jonathan said, verse 6, to his young man that bore his armor, come, let's go over to the garrison of these uncircumcised guys, these Philistines. It may be the Lord will work for us. There is no restraint to the Lord to save by many or by few. Hey, what do you say, bud? Jonathan said to his armor bearer that day. It doesn't matter to the Lord if there's many of us or just a few. I suggest to you that Jonathan knew his Bible. In Deuteronomy chapter 32, it says that one with the Lord will put to flight 1,000, and two with the Lord will put to flight 10,000. I like the Lord's mathematics. It should be one will put to flight 1,000, and two will put to flight 2,000. But no, it doesn't work that way in God's economy. It's exponential. It's explosive. One will beat 1,000 and two will beat 10 times that many, which means how many would 10 be able to take on? You do the math. It's amazing. Jonathan knew his Bible. Evidently, he said, look, what does it matter if it's just a couple of us or the whole army? If two can put to flight 10,000 of the enemy, if the Lord is with us, hey, There's not 10,000 Philistines over there. Piece of cake. What do you say? It doesn't matter with the Lord, you see. The book of Daniel says, those who know their God shall do great exploits. The more I know about the Lord, the more faith I'll have to do great things for the Lord. William Carey was the one who said, that famous missionary of generations ago. He says, attempt great things for God and expect great things from God. I've often said, you know, I think every person ought to be involved in something that is so big and grand that if God is not in it, it's doomed to fail. Get over your head, you see. Do something in some way, however the Spirit should lead you, that is bigger than you are, so much so that if God isn't in it, it can't work. See, attempt great things for God. Expect great things from God. What do you say? Jonathan said to his armor guy that day. Let's go. His armor bearer, to his credit, said, do all that is in thine heart. Do it. Wow. What a wonderful compadre. What a wonderful partner. One that would say, yeah, okay. Not a wet blanket. Not holding back. And listen, that's so easy to do with people that you're partnering with. Perhaps your spouse. Maybe a co-worker. Maybe a brother or a sister. It's so easy to be negative. It's so easy to say, Jonathan, those Philistines are big guys. They're experienced warriors. They've got a huge advantage. What do you mean, just me and you? You know, come on, buddy. Like the old Tonto and Lone Ranger story. You know it. I forget it, but you know it. So, so he didn't do that. He didn't do it. He didn't put a wet blanket on Jonathan, but said, whatever sounds good to you sounds good to me. If it's on your heart, hey, I'm with you, Jonathan, you see. So they would go. On their way, Jonathan said, behold, we will pass over to these guys. Then we'll make ourselves known unto them. And if they say, verse 9 to us, you guys stay there until we come to you. We will stand in our place and will not go up to their fort. But if they say, verse 10, come up unto us, then we will go up, for the Lord hath delivered them into our hand. And this is going to be a sign for us. Jonathan, a guy with his armor bearer who's stepping out. Our generation, the baby boomers, tend to say, take it easy. But the man of faith ought to respond, no, take a chance. Not kick back, but step out. Not cruise, but engage, you see. Put it in overdrive. But our generation, mine particularly, it's funny. We tend to not want to step out. We tend to not want to step up. And that's why I think so many of us miss out and never move up. Here, Jonathan and his armor bearer together, these young men were saying, let's step out and just see what the Lord might want to do. But they weren't being presumptuous. They said, now, if the Lord doesn't want us to go, then we're not going to plunge ahead. So here's what we'll do. We'll leave it up to him. We'll let the Lord make the final call. If those guys, those Philistines, when we make ourselves known, when we make faces at them or whatever we do to get their attention, if they say, you guys stay there, we're going to come down and clean your clocks. Man, then let's split. God's not in this plan. But if they say, hey, you guys, you punks, come on up here. We'll show you a thing or two. Then, hey, it's okay. Let's go. We know God's with us. such a key, is to take a chance, take a risk, step out, step up, but at the same time, don't be presumptuous and try to barge in when the Lord is not opening the door, you see. It's a wonderful balance that's being painted in our story. It's a wonderful balance being portrayed in this text. Let's go see what the Lord might want to do, but if the Lord's not in it, then we're not going to be presumptuous. That would be foolish, you see. But we'll give the opportunity for the Lord to open the door. We'll be right there at the threshold, not long distance. We'll be right there. We're right in position. We're right in place. We're there. We're right where we can be used miraculously. And we're there on the banks of the Jordan River with our feet right over the water, so to speak. A lot of people are waiting for something to happen, and they're waiting at a great distance. They say, well, Lord, if you want to do something with me, you have my phone number. You've got my email. You know how to get a hold of me. I think that's missing it. I think a better way is to do what Jonathan did in this day. He got right to the edge. He was right at the door. He wasn't going to force it, but he was in place to storm through it. Such a key. It really is. It's really a key. When I moved up here years ago, 25 years ago this March, I could have stayed in San Jose and said, well, you know, Lord, if you really want me to, then, Lord, have the church grow to be about 300 people and then have them give me a call. See, it doesn't work that way. You need to step out. You need to move in. You need to say, here I am in place right here. Now, Lord, if you don't open doors, I'll back off. I'm not going to force myself, but Lord, I'm in place. And perhaps you're going through something right now, vocationally or relationally or ministerially or whatever it might be, and the Lord may be saying to you, step up, move out, get ready. But Lord, what if you're not in it? Then I will close the doors that no man can open. But you'll never see it open if you're not in eyesight. You're not going to see it open from a long distance. You got to be there, you see. And that's what Jonathan did. So he's right there. But he wasn't going to force himself. Lord, if you're not in this, we don't want any part of this. So they made themselves known to the Philistines. And the Philistines looked down from their garrison there, their fortress in the rocks. And they saw Jonathan and his buddy. And as they discovered themselves, here's what they said, verse 11. The Philistines said, behold, the Hebrews come forth out of their holes where they have hid themselves. They're calling these guys basically gophers. Well, isn't this something? Look at these two rascals. Look at these two gophers. They've come out of their holes because, remember, the Israelites were hiding away. They were afraid of the Philistines. Their knees were knocking. You know, their teeth were chattering. They were intimidated by the Philistines. They were afraid of the Philistines. And now the Philistines see these two Israelites. Whoa, look at this. A couple of guys came out of their holes. A couple of gophers. And the men of the garrison, 12, answered Jonathan and his buddy and said, come up here, we'll show you a thing. Come up here, you guys. And Jonathan said to his buddy, come after me. Let's go, for the Lord hath delivered them into the hand of Israel. They said, come on up here, you gophers. Ah, let's go for it. They're calling us gophers. Let's go for it. Let's just do it right now. Let's charge up. Let's take them on. God's with us, you see. They're calling us a bunch of rodents? We'll show them. So they made their way up. They climbed, verse 13, on their hands and their feet up the rocks to where the garrison of the Philistines was. And they took on those Philistines. And the Philistines, verse 13, fell before Jonathan. and his armor bearer slew after him. So Jonathan knocked the Philistines down, and his buddy came by and lopped off their heads. And that first slaughter, which Jonathan and his armor bearer made, was about 20 guys, 20 men, butchered there in the rocks of the Philistine garrison. And then verse 15 says, there was a trembling in the army, the host, the Philistines, also in the field among all the people. The garrison, the spoilers, they also trembled, and the earth quaked. So it was a very great trembling. The idea here is these guys were freaked out internally. They couldn't believe that two men were wiping out their army. Two young guys, Jonathan and his armor bearer, already killed 20 of their crack fighters. And then, as they were worried and trembling and wondering what's going on, what's coming down, the earth began to quake too. Trembling within, trembling without. They were all shook up literally, you see. There was a great trembling. Now the watchman of Saul in Gibeah of Benjamin looked, and behold, the multitude melted away. They went on beating down each other. Now, evidently, as they're trembling, they're disoriented, they're confused, they're shaken up by the earthquake, and they're trembling within as well, and they begin to just fillet away at each other. They're trembling. The old adage is so true. Satan trembles when he sees the weakest saint upon his knees. Jonathan was on his knees, literally. His hands and his knees. He was literally crawling up the rocks, we were told earlier. He was on his knees. He's doing what Jesus said we get to do. Matthew chapter 16, Jesus told me and you, I will build my church and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. You know, for many years, I used to think that that was a verse for the church saying, Satan is not going to conquer us. That we'll be okay. That he can't conquer you and can't conquer me and can't conquer our congregation corporately. But that's not what Jesus was getting at. I used to think that in my growing up years. Oh yeah. Man, Jesus will build his church and the gates of hell will not prevail. But you know, one day years ago, I was thinking about that a little more carefully. And it hit me. It occurred to me. Gates. The gates of hell shall not prevail. Gates. Gates don't attack. I've never seen gates attack anybody. You don't walk down a sidewalk and say, watch out. Gates might be on the attack. I got to be careful today because the gates might be coming out on the attack. No. Gates don't attack. We go through gates. And Jesus was saying the gates of hell shall not prevail. What he's declaring is you offensively are going to storm through the gates of hell. You on the offense are going to take the territory that was held by the enemy previously.
Isn't that great? Have you seen that before? We are the ones on the offense. We are the ones who God will use to take territory for His kingdom. We will continue to look at this story and make application in our next program. We do hope that you can join us then. This teaching is also available on the Searchlight website at johncorson.com. You will also find on the website Pastor John's books and other Bible study resources. Again, the address of the website is johncorson.com. That's johncorson.com.
Pastor John has often encouraged us to spend time each day contemplating the Word of God. One great way to do this is with a daily devotional. Pastor John has put together three daily devotionals that cover the entire Bible. A Pillar by Day and A Day of Feasting are taken from the Old Testament. A Day's Journey is a devotional from the New Testament. Each daily devotional has 365 short meditations and are presented in John's insightful and practical style. You may order each daily devotional from our website at johncorson.com.
Searchlight is a listener-supported ministry. We appreciate your prayers and support. May the Lord richly bless you.